The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors. Happy Wednesday morning. It is Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM in Pittsfield. Thanks for tuning in. Bob Heck here with you. And we're going to take a quick look at the forecast before we get started today.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, partly cloudy. Near steady temperature in the lower 40s. Southeast wind around 5 miles per hour. Wednesday, mostly sunny. Highs in the upper 60s. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Wednesday night, cloudy. A chance of rain in the evening, then rain after midnight. Lows in the mid 40s. Southeast wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Chance of rain 90%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
45 degrees right now at our Federico Drive studios. It is Morning Drive here on a Wednesday morning. What's up, everybody? Our guest this morning, Colleen Pasetto from Berkshire Heart and Mind Therapy, which will be opening up, grand opening tomorrow from 3 to 7 p.m. at 34 Depot Street. Colleen, talk to us before we really get into the business and mental health and things along those lines. Tell us about yourself. Like, how did you get into this? What inspired you to start this business?
So I originally started actually out in retail. I'm born and raised in the Berkshires, lived in the Berkshires pretty much almost all my life. Worked in retail for the longest time as like a retail manager, district manager, was laid off from a big box store that was local. And then I was offered an amazing opportunity through the state of Massachusetts and stuff like that to go back to school. I got through unemployment where they had a special program. You could go through your 2-year associate's degree at Berkshire Community College, which was amazing.
Oh, wow.
Started off with a great professor named Audrey Ringer, who actually encouraged me to continue to go on for my bachelor's and master's. And I did. I went and worked for a community mental health clinic, not only supervising, but doing things like outpatient, intensive in-home therapy, mentoring, and wide rest of things, including in like in-home hospital diversion program, participating in providing the care. And I saw like a wide aspect of different things that I felt, you know, through our community was missing, but different ways that things could be approached and new ways to just kind of get past some of the barriers. So I kind of joined that, became a NASW member for Massachusetts, became some parts of different boards and other stuff that they had for like things that had to do with like political action committees. I'm also the Berkshire County Delegate Assembly Representative. That was elected for our county through the NASW Massachusetts. And I kind of decided, well, I want to have where not only am I doing my individual group practice, I decided, well, there's a different way I can actually then become a group practice and provide a different kind of similar service to the others, but different, like a neuro-affirming, supportive, more home-like kind of atmosphere for therapy. Where, you know, each client, just like the other agencies, you know, they're the key piece, but, you know, trying to make it more, you know, more about the client and, you know, meeting them more where we could even more as a whole. So.
Excellent. And so you go, why are you starting this business? Is there, obviously there's a massive need for mental health services here in particularly Berkshire County.
Yes. So there's definitely a big need in Berkshire County, just with all my observation, my life experience, but seeing that there's a big need for it.
Mm-hmm.
I also was diagnosed with late AUD. So I have both ADHD and autism, we knew for the longest time. So that plus life experiences, I was able to see that, you know, from a different lens and a different kind of way of presenting and working with the clients and people in our community. As a whole, no matter who they are, what they have going on for experience, no matter what part of the community they're from, their ethnical background, et cetera, that, you know, we needed something a little bit different in the community that could come from that lens, and kind of look at it from a way of a different nurturing way of doing the treatment.
Okay. And why do you think there's been such a spike in mental health needs? I mean, obviously, we've seen it throughout the community in a variety of different places. What do you think is the cause for such a spike?
So we actually have multiple causes. It's kind of like an onion trying to peel it back. There's different levels, different layers. So obviously, we've been having an increase in it since the pandemic. So people with isolating, we have, you know, increased technology that children, adults, teens that were pretty much not really forced upon, but had to take in and incorporate because of the pandemic. And since then, even though, you know, we're back to being in person and other stuff, it's still hard because people are still isolating. There's still the fears of not just sick, but other things that are going on in the community, political stuff, lack of funding that's happening now with different areas. We're finding that, you know, there's different things now that are affecting us, from the housing shortages that are affecting homelessness, are, you know, things that are going with funding, with housing. So there's a lot of stuff people are getting. There's increase in depression, anxiety that's happening. Increased, you know, times of substance use and stuff like that. So there's like also, even though we have services out there, we don't have enough of certain services, not enough funding. We have a lack and shortage of clinicians and providers.
Yes.
Even the, you know, income wage for them to make, they go through a lot of colleges. We have now the stuff with the college loans that's getting affected. So they have huge loans. They don't make enough income. So we're trying to find different ways statewide, nationwide, to get more clinicians to come in the field. You know, that's why we're working on the Compact Act, trying to get Massachusetts to join nationwide so we can pull clinicians from different areas until we can increase more clinicians and even longer to kind of take care of some of those barriers. But there's a lot of different aspects that are happening between all that.
Well, let's take a step back for a second. What is the Compact Act?
So they are currently, there's at least 38 states nationwide who have signed on through social work and psychology and psychiatry, where they can practice across state if they have an extra additional license in addition to what we have now. So like, for example, if Massachusetts, which it's down in the House right now, I guess they're trying to still get certain things passed. It looks like it's, you know, going very well. Once Massachusetts were to sign on to it, we, along with Massachusetts and the other 38 states and any other ones that are signed, once we get that license, we could actually work telehealth across lines. As long as we follow state guidelines, we have the insurance that we need, we follow insurances, guidelines, and those state guidelines, et cetera, we could actually treat people in different states from where we're at. Whereas Massachusetts right now, you have to be physically in the state of Massachusetts, both the client and us, and be insured and all that, and take certain insurances or not insurances, private pay. Unless we have a license in another state, then we can't cross over. So it's allowing clinicians nationwide to come together as a big collaborative to work together to provide the services that we need locally and nationally.
So you're saying with telehealth, right? And telehealth is a huge option now across the board, particularly in this line of work. But what you're saying is, if you're here in Massachusetts and, like, I have a meeting in New Lebanon and, you know, I plan my day to do my telehealth appointment from New Lebanon, which is, what, 7 minutes from the Massachusetts border, we can't have the meeting.
Correct. Both states would have to be on board of the Compact Act. So both Mass and New York would have to be. Plus, the clinician would need to have the Compact Act licensure and be able to make sure that their insurances say, yes, we can go ahead and do this. If all that was in place, yes, we could literally be doing is I could be sitting in Massachusetts right here. You could be in New York working and or even living in New York. And I could actually be doing the sessions with you instead of you having to figure out how do I get there after work. I'm working till 5:00. Then there's rush time. Plus, then we have certain agencies and services that nationwide have not taken on the extra flexible scheduling of being able to work past 5:00 telehealth. Whereas with, you know, us, we, you know, we're able to do that. If we're on board with that, we can actually open up our flexibility for working with the clients.
We're here with Colleen Pasetto this morning from Berkshire Heart and Mind Therapy. Their grand opening celebration is tomorrow at 3 at 34 Depot Street in Pittsfield. And we're talking about, you know, the need for something like this and how, I mean, people try and make calls, get into mental health, and you hear it all the time, and it's months before you get in, or you can't get in at all, and you're on a waiting list. I mean, that's, like, what's the point if you're going to be on a waiting list?
Yeah, it's very hard, and it can be very traumatic being on a wait list and not having that service available immediately. And that's why, you know, it's important to have multiple, you know, whether it be group practices, private practices, agencies, all coming together, collaborating, working together, both locally, but even nationally, to help us to continue to, you know, take away the barrier that exists that are causing the wait list. Between the Compact Act, telehealth, and other stuff that has started to decrease some of the wait lists, but they're still out there.
I mean, I grew up in a time where, you know, it was severely stigmatized to have mental health issues or to be going to therapy or things along those lines. For somebody from my generation to even pick up the phone and make that phone call, like, things have to be in a really bad spot already. And, like, I guess it would be bad if someone's in that really tough spot where they're even making the phone call to begin with to be told, oh, we can't get you in, or it's going to be a year or something like that. Because, like, who knows what it looks like a year down the road?
Yeah, it can be very, you know, preventative from keeping them coming in to get therapy when they need, you know, between the stigmatism and the wait list. But, you know, that's, you know, a key piece of stuff that we're all trying to work on, you know, coming past to decrease those wait lists, to make it so somebody can get therapy, you know, as they're needing, when they need it. You know, and there's a lot of different things that can, you know, play a role in that. And it's, you know, still trying to make sure that we have that available for everybody, no matter what age, gender, you know, or identity, that they can, you know, feel comfortable with the service and being able to get it and not have to be like, well, why am I going to wait?
I mean, I still think there's stigma, you know, from my generation. I think the younger generation have, you know, embraced mental health issues and things like that. We see the spike of folks, the younger generation versus us. Is that more of, like, technology and all that stuff happening, or is it more of a byproduct of, you know, it's not at, you're not going to get made fun of if you're in therapy now? Because I know, like, in middle school and high school, when I was a kid, you know, jokes would have been made.
Yeah, I think it's a combination. There's a lot of different things that are helping now. I mean, we still have where, you know, the older generation and even some of the younger generation, too, you know, it still goes back to us respecting, you know, their culture, their ethnic identity. They, you know, have different rules, you know, various people in their family. You know, we grew up in a generation where, you know, at the time, what happens in the family stays in the family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're to a point now where I believe, you know, people are starting to say, you know what, it's okay. I need this help, but you know what, I can still be respectful of certain things, but I need help. You know, it's okay for me to see somebody and talk to somebody. But there are still some of that that's keeping people back. And that's why it's important for us as, you know, providers and agencies or group practices to still be able to embrace where they come from, who they are, to make it, you know, more comfortable for them and open for them to come get services.
Is Berkshire County, like, a really bad spot for mental health as far as, you know, finding providers? And obviously we have some great agencies in here, but there's only so many people.
Berkshire County, yes, just like the state of Massachusetts, you know, throughout, there is a big shortage. We're finding that, you know, it's widespread, not just locally, it's statewide, nationwide.
Really?
Yeah. We are, I think, 40% of, I think, the U.S. has areas that are underserved or don't have enough access to clinical or clinicians and therapy. So it's actually really statewide as well as nationwide. Berkshire County, definitely we do struggle because obviously, as you see with medical and other stuff, we're losing providers from different places. But it can be fixed if, you know, we work on various things, various, you know, things from increasing, you know, ways to incorporate getting them here, pay rates, you know, getting more different services and other stuff and making it more, you know, accessible as well for the community.
Now, as somebody who's gone through the schooling and everything, you have to have a master's degree to be a clinician. Yes.
Yes.
Do you feel that the work you did in your master's program significantly made you better? Because I know a lot of people may shy away from this type of work, because you talked about it earlier, you know, the costs of going to school and the cost of getting the education and the cost of getting degrees. Do you see a world where you're not going to have to get a master's degree to be able to do something like this?
It's my professional opinion that master's degree will be needed for this no matter what, because the amount of training that we go through, we have to constantly, continually educate and train and, you know, update different stuff for our knowledge as we go with times, you know, it changes. We need to change and adapt too. But I do think this is something that's going to need a master's level. Technology like AI programs are not acceptable for therapy. Because you don't really have a real person that's on the other end that has all this knowledge, training. But yeah, master's is where it needs to be. And, you know, I professionally feel that that's where it's going to be for a long time.
So you don't feel like AI could be beneficial to this type of work?
When it comes to therapy, it's better off having an actual person that can see you face-to-face, whether it be on telehealth or in person by, you know, audio hearing. AIs, no matter how much they train it, it's not going to be a person. It's not going to have that human empathic empathy. It's not going to have everything that it needs. So no, AI is not something that's going to be really beneficial to have as a therapist.
Do you see the technology as, you know, technology gets better and better and better? Do you see some form of technology being able to assist in this? You know, to lower wait times, to lower, you know, to give people instant access to some sort of technology to maybe not necessarily clinician, but something like it?
Anything's possible. There may be, you know, programs out there that help you find like a clinician that has maybe, you know, sooner availability with AI. Maybe, you know, they can help you find like the name of different places locally near you that have like a good fit match. I think I saw the other day there was something AI out there that was taking information from like all the different clinicians or websites who they were and had something that would help them find like the best match of a clinician near them that had like a personality kind of like match thing. That's a possibility too. Anything's possible, I think. You know, it's just making sure that whatever we have for technology AI, yes, we continue to grow with it. It continues to grow with us, but we also make sure that it's something that's safe and doesn't have risks and is beneficial to the client and community.
We're talking with Colleen Pasetto, Berkshire Heart and Mind Therapy. The grand opening is tomorrow. Talk to us about Berkshire Heart and Mind Therapy. You say you're doing things differently. How does that work? Like, I don't know how many people even know. Like, you're not going to be doing the you're sitting in a chair and the other person's sitting on a couch type deal. The old the old trope of what mental health and things like this is all about.
It's actually, that's kind of actually ironic because I actually do have both chairs and couches in my office.
So. Okay. I mean,
But we have it. It's more like a home setting, office setting, you know, where they can come in. They don't have to be on the old psychiatry chair. You know, we sit, we work through things, talk on things that they're ready to talk on and work about, whether it be starting with like what we call person-centered therapy. And it's just more of a warm, down-to-earth setting. So it's not clinical. It's not like a psychiatry setting. It's more of a more warm setting that they can come in, sit down, we talk. For children, teens, we have where, you know, we have the play therapy, we have games, we have the puppets, you know, we have board games, card games, painting, art. You know, we're even in the process of creating a therapy group for anxiety, depression, and some other diagnosis. For both adolescents and adults that do D&D for role-playing. So we are in the middle of that therapy group that we're creating. So there's, like, different things that are going to make it so it's more fun, more, you know, interesting. But we have like different things that we're doing than, you know, some of the other, you know, more clinical settings do.
Do you need a different type of mindset, different type of training to work with children versus adults?
It's very good with children to make sure that, you know, we are actually, you know, learning the different stages, what they go through, taking a lot of different trainings, educations, classes regarding children, you know, and families. With the master's degree, that's one of the things, too, is like for social work, even though we did what's called a generalist practice, we learned actually how to work with multiple populations, cultures, ages. And we actually were, you know, for our classes, we were actually learning and all the information and how to work with children. So that is, you know, important to have that. But, you know, sometimes it's also what we increase our knowledge with. That's important, too. And, you know, taking on any kind of trainings that help you with anything with children is good. Making sure we're taking the mandated reporting trainings, just so we can kind of be aware of what to look for. Doesn't mean we always end up needing to be mandating reporting. Mm-hmm. Only when it's, you know, something that obviously we need to. But it allows us to help support them on different aspects, including those that, you know, might have DCF involvement, reunification plans. The education and training is a big key piece.
Wow, so it's a lot more complicated than it is on the surface. I mean, if you're a parent of a child, you know, once they get to become teens, they sort of lock up anyways and, you know, stay in their rooms. If you're a parent of a teen, are there certain signs you should be looking for that perhaps your kid might be in a little bit of trouble as far as the mental health goes?
Yeah, I mean, they pretty much, you know, you want to make sure, look to see, you know, are they hanging out with the right people? Are they making the right decisions? You know, are they coming in, you know, looking, smelling, or sounding different? You know, are they, you know, by chance using substances? Or, you know, are they, you know, hanging out in areas that they really shouldn't be? And that's another thing. We don't have enough places locally and nationwide to allow adolescents to have healthy activities outside of the home. Because as you've seen over the year, we had like, we used to have before the pandemic, we had tons of different places you can go to.
Right.
You know, and now a lot of those settings have decreased. So it's, you know, still, you know, looking to see, you know, are they isolating? Are they shutting down? You know, are there different things that are appearing, you know, where they're getting depressed? Are they changing who they are? Are they giving away things of theirs, you know, that they normally wouldn't, that were of value, you know, at risk, you know, in case there's like a suicidal risk going on and stuff like that. But, you know, whenever they have questions or concerns, you know, they can always call, you know, there's the different ones that we have online that you can go to kind of ask questions and stuff like that, you know, local crisis if they're in crisis. And even, you know, if they're questioning, they can, you know, always see if one of the places that does therapy can evaluate, you know, to see if they need to have therapy if there's a concern. But it's important too, the parents to remember that they themselves, if they're going through struggles and their children are too, it's not bad for the parents to seek treatment and support too.
We're at 7:53 right now, just before 8 o'clock, a couple of minutes before the break. Talk to us about some of the things that are going to be happening at the grand opening tomorrow.
So we are going to start having where people can show up around 3 o'clock. The ribbon cutting with the mayor is going to be about 3:30. We're going to have their Downtown Pittsfield Inc., One Berkshire's. We're going to have Common Capital, who has also helped to make this possible, along with some other additional funding places and people that have been supportive in our growth and our journey. We're going to have, you know, food throughout certain parts of the day during it that people can get. We're going to have face painting with Von Bo Ty. She's going to be there. We're going to have balloons by Ben for the balloon twisting. He's going to be there for the children. You know, we will probably have some different handouts. People can walk and tour our office, including see what our expressive wellness room looks like, which is what treats, you know, where we have like art therapy, play therapy, other stuff. We can do yoga, mindfulness for adults in there too. We also have another room that, you know, for teens, we just got a foosball and air hockey table that, you know, the teens, okay, we can play, you know, some of that. So this way we have like more different items to help them open up and feel comfortable with therapy. So it's not just sitting down and just feeling like you're being grilled.
And how does the insurance aspect work, you know, with mental health in general? Has this something that's always been sort of covered by insurance, or is this a more recent thing?
If you were to go back like 20 years, you know, certain insurances would cover it. Some wouldn't. There would be high deductibles. Now, a good majority of the ones in Massachusetts cover them. It's just making sure that you're aware of, you know, your insurance. Does it have a certain amount of times they allow you to be seen? Is there a copay deductible? MassHealth and Medicaid and Medicare and the Health Connector, a good majority of their plans have no issues covering it. And then there's people out there that, you know, struggle, don't have the insurance. So, you know, there is the out-of-pocket costs. Unfortunately for them, they would have to pay, you know, certain amounts. But a good majority of the mental health, you know, is covered. I believe Massachusetts, I think behavioral health, it's supposed to be a good percentage of it, it's supposed to be covered.
Yeah, and it's, I say over the past 20 years or so, we've seen this happen. I mean, obviously, out-of-pocket costs for anything without insurance. Not just, I mean, if you don't have insurance and take an ambulance ride down the street, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
That's not going to be cheap.
No.
You know, is there a place for someone who doesn't have insurance to go? Because I would imagine that'd be a... If you don't have insurance, you have some stressors in your life, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's definitely... I think that's one of the other barriers right now is that, you know, there's a lot of places that if you don't have health insurance, like a lot of the private practices, you can pay out of pocket. But again, it gets costly. So it's looking for ones that have sliding scales. We're actually working on trying to find a way to have a sliding scale at some point for those that don't have insurance. But we pretty much accept almost every insurance. But, you know, I think that's one of the other things, too. It's hard. There's certain clinics, I think, statewide that they can go into that they can have so many sessions. But, again, there's a lot out there that are still struggling because they don't have the insurance, and if their copays, deductibles are high as well, they're more likely to not seek treatment because they can't afford it.
Right. It's one of those things where, you know, people are dealing that with medications, you know. Do I get food or do I get my medications this week? So it's just another, I mean, healthcare is rough. Healthcare is completely rough. We're at 7:58 right now. We're with Colleen Pasetto from Berkshire Heart and Mind Therapy. We're going to take a short time out. We'll be back on the other side of the break to talk more here on WTBR.
Tune for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield. 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu.
And from Sondrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sondrini.com.
Wonder what happened to those great local PCTV channels? Did you lose them? No worries, they're still there. Go to cable channels 1301, 1302, and 1303 to watch the best local content on television. News and information, sports and entertainment, city council, school committee, July 4th parade. It's all there waiting for you. Pittsfield Community Television. For over 30 years, we are still your local television.
Want more confidence using technology? PCTV offers free classes to help you navigate the internet, protect your privacy, and use your devices with ease. Whether you're a beginner or need a refresher, we've got you covered. Sign up today. Call 413-445-4234 or visit pittsfieldtv.org. Empower yourself with digital skills because everyone deserves to stay connected. Brought to you by PCTV and the Alliance for Digital Equity, keeping communities connected.
Hello, Phil Tierney here, the host of Berkshire Jazz, where I play all the young tigers and old lions of jazz every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 on WTBR 89.7, Pittsfield Community Radio. Join me Saturday at 8. And if you know someone who likes and enjoys this great American classical music, tell them about us. Spread the word. Jazz is alive and well on WTBR 89.7. Thanks for listening.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the morning drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Welcome back to Morning Drive, just after 8 o'clock here on a Wednesday. Bob Heck here with you, and we are going to take another look at the forecasts. Let's see what we're up against.
Berkshire weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, partly cloudy. Near steady temperature in the lower 40s. Southeast wind around 5 miles per hour. Wednesday, mostly sunny. Highs in the upper 60s. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Wednesday night, cloudy. A chance of rain in the evening. Then rain after midnight. Lows in the mid 40s. Southeast wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Chance of rain 90%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
We are looking at 45 degrees right now at our Federico Drive studios here in Pittsfield. 67 today, but it's going to cool off after that because, God forbid, we have nice things. We're here with Colleen Pacetto from, Berkshire Heart and Mind Therapy, opening tomorrow, their grand opening, from 3 to 7 p.m. at 34 Depot Street in Pittsfield. So get down there and check that out. Something else I wanted to touch on as far as, you know, there's barriers to getting therapy, both, from the therapist's perspective where there's not enough. But then there's external factors as well, stigma. Obviously, with the political culture we have now, is it a challenge for immigrants to perhaps seek out mental health services because of fears of, you know, getting in the system, and so to speak, and fear sparked by things happening with immigrants nowadays anyways?
Yes, there is definitely a struggle with that. There's a lot of fears about, you know, if they're going to go somewhere, you know, will they be seen? What will happen? We have a great, amazing, you know, places locally that are being supportive to, you know, a lot of the immigrants and those that, you know, are over here with their families. You know, they have fear of, you know, who's going to care for their family, if issues with insurance, if they don't have certain documentation to get the insurance. There are different barriers with that. They have fear accessing care due to, you know, obviously the immigration concerns. You know, language difficulties can be a struggle too if there's not enough providers or services that have like multilingual or other services available to support them. That can also, you know, delay or add wait list for their care. But yeah, there's fears and concerns, and it can, you know, prevent them from seeking services when they really do need services.
I mean, that's interesting because I hadn't even thought of some of that. You know, I was thinking about from the perspective of what we're seeing with immigration now and ICE and all that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think of a lack of multilingual providers. Is that really a huge issue right now?
That can be an issue. Mm-hmm. You know, there are places that will refer to places that do have them. And, you know, we ourselves, you know, when we don't have one available, that can cause a wait time, you know. So there are different, you know, programs out there that you can use to help with some of it. But those programs can be costly too. So it's making sure that, you know, that is available for, you know, no cost, even statewide, that's still HIPAA compliant for clinicians, you know, and other services and agencies to make sure that we can decrease the waits for them and to help encourage them to come see us for support as well. But yeah, if they don't have insurance, they don't, they have the fear due to the different political stuff that can really impact them.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, other cultures, are there cultures out there that, you know, just don't believe in therapy at this point? Or is it, You know, and our culture was the same way back 30, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. Is that still holding on in some communities or?
Nationwide and even, you know, in the global, there's a lot of different cultures that do believe that, you know, again, what happens stays in the family. You don't mm-hmm. say something, you don't do stuff. You know, each family, you know, is different. So it really depends on, like, you know, do they have enough supports here? Do they have family? But cultural background can definitely play a role in that as well. But there is, yeah, different ones throughout that can, you know.
Do you see a lot? You talk about having a welcoming space and all that. But do you see the majority of these appointments moving to telehealth in the future? Or, I guess another question is, do you see people who are like, ew, telehealth, I don't want to do that?
I have actually a good amount of clients right now that are coming in office right now. So we are seeing an increase of people wanting to return to in-person sessions. But there are a lot that do need and want telehealth. So I think it's like right now it's like 50-50, at least, you know, my perspective and other clinicians that I've spoken to. Plus, there are certain insurances now, and I have at least one, that requires a certain percentage of our clients have to be in person.
Oh, really?
Yes. They do want like at least a certain percentage or them to be able to have a certain amount of sessions. Just like with the changes that were coming with Medicare that I think they paused or they're still going. They're going to require that, you know, certain clients with Medicare have to have a certain amount of number of sessions over a certain period of time in person. So there are some insurances that have slowly started to put some of that back in place. So it makes it so you're going to, you know, some people do need to have like an office setting somewhere.
Interesting. Services here in Berkshire County, we've touched upon it, but we sort of have an interesting, Berkshire County is interesting. You know, you've got Pittsfield, North Adams, they're yep. cities. You got Adams, you got Cheshire, they're close to yep. places. And then you have like Alford, Florida, you know, and some of these areas don't even really have sufficient bandwidth to even do telehealth.
Right.
Is it tough reaching out to those areas and getting those folks in for appointments or even evaluating the mental health?
It can definitely be very, you know, complicated if, you know, they don't have access to Wi-Fi, mm-hmm. if they're in an area that doesn't have really good access to phone reception. That can definitely play a role in it, especially if, you know, they're not able to afford to take a bus or other transportation. You know, that's why it's important that, you know, Massachusetts, you know, continues to make it so that every city, town, et cetera, have access to affordable Wi-Fi or, you know, Wi-Fi that works. That's going to be a key piece, I think, too, because there's a lot of rural, you know, areas that right now there's different areas that just can't get certain stuff or the reception's terrible. And there's been, you know, some that I've noticed that, you know, we're able to actually then, you know, because where we're at, we're right near, you know, the intermodal. So they're actually, no matter where in Berkshire County, they can take a bus to us if they really need to. Or they can, you know, find a place that's HIPAA secure and go somewhere else that has access to Wi-Fi. If they're not able to get in person.
Define HIPAA secure, obviously, as far as Wi-Fi and things like that goes. How would somebody know it would be HIPAA secure if they were coming into an appointment like this?
So a lot of the places that have mental health therapy, they want to make sure that, you know, nobody else can hear them,
of course,
that they're
yeah.
having the confidentiality, that, you know, there's not, we want to make sure that obviously, you know, we don't have clients' papers out that have identifying information, that
right.
we're respecting them. That others, you know, are not able to hear what they're going through. So it's making sure that, you know, they're in a place that, you know, they're not having, you know, therapy with somebody sitting next to them that's also having therapy. You want to be able to have a special, you know, room that you can be in, and making sure that it's, you know, you, your provider, and only those that you approve of that, you know, are in an area that you can have that private conversation.
Did we lose a lot of clinicians through the COVID-19 crisis? I know, like, I realized during COVID, I don't have to, nor do I want to work as hard as, you know, I still run a small business on the side, but I am not out 5 nights a week like I was before. You know, I just sort of realized, I kind of like being home and hanging with the family. Did a lot of clinicians sort of scale back after realizing, like, you know, being forced to scale back with the pandemic?
Actually, yes. During the pandemic, from my professional observations, research, and other stuff that I've heard from other clinicians, we have actually seen in the pandemic where we lost clinicians, but we also lost teachers and others who went through either quiet quitting or quick quitting. And they went into other routes of different places that they could work, that, you know, they could work from home, they could be with their children, family. So we did see like a lot of that, you know, and it's, people are slowly starting to come back, but it's, you know, making sure that it's something that too, that, you know, we have enough support and stuff to help, you know, encourage them to come back, you know, and reasons for them to come back. So that's very important too. But yeah, there was a good amount that I think we lost.
We're here with Colleen Pasetto of Berkshire Heart and Mind Therapy. Their grand opening celebration is tomorrow, bringing another badly needed mental health facility option on board here in Berkshire County. The ADHD rates skyrocketing. Is that a product of, and you said, if you don't mind me asking, when were you diagnosed with it?
So I last year was actually officially finally diagnosed.
Really? Okay.
But I knew for like years that, you know, there was, even growing up as a kid, that, you know, there was something different about me, you know, going through being bullied to, I was actually, you know, my first memories of therapy myself was in a school setting, in a group setting, playing board games and play therapy with, you know, other kids at Morningside. So I could, you know, I remember all that, but, I've had it for a while. It's just, it took a while for me to go through, get the testing, to be able to even, you know, have my own version of what I call the awakening, where I'm like, okay, this makes sense. You know, working with a lot of clients that have ADHD, autism, I went through a lot of trainings and certifications myself to do clinical ADHD assessments when doctor's offices refer to me. And that's when I started looking at myself and being like, okay, I can relate to them. This is, you know, these is exactly what I'm seeing. This explains everything I went through from childhood to teen to adult. And it finally, you know, happened last year and I was able to embrace it. And, you know, I have no issue sharing with people that, you know, I'm odd.
Is there treatment for that? And is it effective? I mean, if I were a gambling man, maybe I am, but I would say I have it. I would say there's no doubt in my mind that I have it. Is there effective treatment for that? And are there other areas of mental health that ADHD sort of trends into? Is, if you have it, you're more at risk of X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, so those who have, you know, ADHD or, you know, odd, stuff like that, we do see that it crosses and has additional diagnosis or can have, you know, it's kind of like neurodivergent is like an umbrella. So it talks about different diagnoses and groups of people who have like neurodivergent and like ADHD and autism characteristics, et cetera. But they can have, you know, bipolar, borderline, ADHD, anxiety, depression, you know, they can even have at times have a higher rate of complex PTSD, especially if they've had trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So they do have like overlapping symptoms, and with treatment, you know, whether you're diagnosed or not, you know, it's very important, you know, because a lot of times even with ADHD, autism, there's anxiety, depression, and other mental health ones that overlap, then it's very important to treat those. To be able to work on those helps also to be able to work on other stuff. But we're seeing too is, you know, people will struggle with executive functioning, being able to be organized, focused, having different things that they can get affected. Although there are places out there that will do ADHD coaching and stuff like that, that's a little bit different than therapy because they work more on executive functioning, coping, organizing. Clinically, with a therapist, we don't work on that portion in certain areas of the mental health field unless we're in a behavioral health and we're able to do a wide range of those. Through different programs that they have, depending on the agency. For us in mental health in general, it's mainly the mental health. But if they affect each other and it's something that they're able to work on and we're working on the mental health, that's, you know, a bonus for it.
So, yeah. So there's coaching for it. And, you know, so if you do have it, you should sort of seek treatment for it. If you think you have it anyways.
Right. You want to definitely make sure that, you know, you're working on the mental health piece as well. But if somebody's needing just the, you know, ADHD coaching, that can also be a barrier to getting services because a lot of the health insurances will not pay a licensed clinician to provide that service, which would make more sense for that clinician to be able to do both right now. And a lot of insurance won't pay for them if in certain settings and or certain other stuff. So it's harder to actually get one that has availability that, you know, can actually bill through insurance. So a lot of people right now for ADHD coaching are finding they're paying out of pocket, which can get very costly.
Of course, yeah. So you have to go for like the full mental health treatment if you just want to have some ADHD coaching.
Right, because you want to make sure you're working on both pieces.
Well, yeah.
Because they're kind of like, you know, supportive. But you have the right to say, you know, I don't want the mental health and, you know, look for the ADHD coaching. But it's really hard right now.
Interesting. So you were just diagnosed last year.
Mm-hmm.
So like, what did it look? You said you were odd growing up and things like. Now you mentioned having a group therapy session at Morningside School.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something the schools did back then? But they is it something? Do the schools do a good enough job with it now?
So the schools right now are really working hard to make sure that mm-hmm. they can, you know, have different programs and also have, you know, their therapists. Well, they're clinicians that are kind of like a special version they have in schools that are a little bit different. They're working hard on it. However, it's not a bad thing if, you know, they were to reach out to other places and try to get additional support groups that they could have somebody come in, provide additional stuff that they don't. But a lot of, you know, students, you know, do say that, you know, they feel that sometimes, you know, not just in Berkshire County, but statewide, that there's not enough support.
Sure.
You know, but they're not, it's not because they're not trying. It's also because financially, federally right. funding, their hands are tied again, just like mental health. But it's a key piece for them to, I think, collaborate and continue to work with different places, not just, you know, community agencies, but like private practices, groups, other clinicians, and, you know, to kind of create like a collaborating referral network system that, you know, they can still work together and maybe even have, you know, places like myself and other agencies to come in and maybe establish special like groups that they can have.
Like, is it appropriate for a teacher to perhaps reach out to you and say, you know, we got this kid, Johnny, and things seem to be up with him. Can you come in and chat with him or something like that? Or is that completely inappropriate for an educator?
Usually the protocol a lot of them will do is they'll have a conversation with the family mm-hmm. and recommend that they still try to reach out to seek services. Because they want to make sure that, you know, the family is still able to have their own individual say and stuff.
Of course. Yeah.
But yeah, it should be really, you know, they should have that conversation with the family or the parents and, you know, encourage them to reach out. They can, you know, with permission of the parents, you know, have their counselor or, you know, adjustment counselors, et cetera, also place a referral with the family support and knowledge. That's a key piece. It's very important that they have knowledge and give permission. So they're not caught off guard of, oh, I just got a referral, but that teacher didn't talk to me or I wasn't aware.
Gotcha.
Or I wasn't given the opportunity myself to, you know, go and seek this. I mean, they could, but again, we would have to call the parent, you know, get permission to, you know, have them, you know, be referred to see if they want the treatment. It's, you know, better just to have that conversation with the parent, and, you know, even support them, maybe make the call with them together or place the referral together.
We got about 10 minutes to go. Let's go a little deeper here in the sense that, you know, it's, and I wouldn't even know what this is, but if you find a family member like in significant crisis, and, you know, about to do something that's irreversible, trying to dance around the actual word, like, what's the protocol? Because, like, Do you call 911? Do you want the cops involved, or are you calling an ambulance? Are you going to the emergency room? Like, what are you supposed to do in that situation?
Well, they should always do is if somebody is in immediate need, you know, they can call the Breen Center Crisis to see if, you know, it's something where they need it. But if they're actually at risk of harming themselves, you know, they can go ahead and probably call the police and stuff. But we find that, you know, if somebody is at risk and that is made the first call, they're more likely not to follow through or get support. It could be more scary. It could be, you know, more traumatic. Mm-hmm. So the Breen Crisis Team, you know, and our local crisis teams statewide are amazing. They can actually, you know, have somebody come out, evaluate, assess, you know, if they feel that they need you to call 911, you know, they can tell you that too. But obviously if they're in immediate need and, you know, harming themselves right then and there, and you don't have time to call Breen, I mean, you could call 911, but the crisis team is really good at, you know, sending someone out or telling you if you need to call 911 right away.
Do you think we need a more robust co-responder program?
So I believe we have a good responder, but I think statewide, you know, it definitely can always use improvements. You know, obviously we want to make sure that we have people getting called out there that are trained for crisis response, mm-hmm. to, you know, reduce the risk of them, you know, escalating, you know, issues to a point where they harm themselves or others. But also, you know, it's still important to have protocols put in place for those crisis providers that go out in the teams, whether they be, you know, on the police departments or part of the local crisis team, you know, making sure that, you know, not only is, you know, the person they're responding to protected, but needing to make sure they themselves too are protected. So I think it's, you know, something where we always need to reevaluate and constantly improve on.
We are at 8:21. We're with Colleen Pacetto, Berkshire Heart and Mind Therapy. The grand opening celebration and ribbon cutting ceremony tomorrow, 3 to 7. Check it out. They were 34 Depot Street in Pittsfield. A few minutes left. Is there anything that you want to get to that I didn't get to?
I think we've pretty much covered everything. Just, you know, looking forward to help serve and, you know, get more clinicians on board so we can have them start working with flexible schedules, you know, that are both telehealthy and in person so we can start, you know, help supporting our community more.
Are you going to be open evenings and weekends too?
So right now we are working on that. If we get enough clinicians, mm-hmm. then I will be able to hire an additional administrator and be able to stay open later in the evenings and weekends. I'm actually myself starting to add occasionally Saturdays for myself. So once I can get some more clinicians, we'll be able to work on extending that.
Colleen Pacetto, everybody, thank you for joining me this morning. Very interesting conversation about mental health. And obviously, you said we covered everything we could cover. We have not, as far as mental health goes. You could do a week of radio on it. So,
exactly.
We'll have you back again as soon as you get up and running. So congratulations on your success. I hope everything goes well with the grand opening tomorrow. So good luck.
Thank you.
All right. We are getting ready to wrap things up today. Thank you so much for tuning in on Morning Drive. Bob Heck wrapping things up. Sean Sayre in the big chair tomorrow. I'll be back with you next week. Have a great day. Enjoy the last sunshiny day for a little while.